Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here live from the Kintec Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Canucks Talk brought to you by the Hockey Shop in Langley. Shop in store or online at the Hockey Shop. .com. Now joining us, he covers the NHL for The Athletic, our guy Sean Gentile. Sean, what's going on, man?
Boys, how are we doing? It's been a minute.
Yeah, it has. Glad to have you back on the show here. And I mean, we were just kind of talking about it in the last segment. I mean, the Canucks season has been bizarre, but it seems like just around the NHL, there are a lot of teams going through it so far this year, right? I mean, the Canucks have been at certain points, obviously the Predators, the Penguins, they've turned things around a little bit, and the Rangers really in the spotlight as well right now. And the latest news today, you know, Kaapo Kakko not mincing words, talking about getting healthy scratch, saying he doesn't think, you know, it's the easy thing to pull a young guy out of the lineup, doesn't think he's been the worst player. What's your read on the situation in New York with the Rangers and where we could be headed here?
Yeah, Kakko was a guy who earlier in the season too, it felt like he'd turned a corner maybe. I don't know. That might be giving him a little too much credit, but I don't know. There was a stretch in October, November where you're like, okay, this guy's turned into a legitimate, you know, middle six winger on a good team. Like, he might not have been scoring all that much, but bringing some physicality, like, you know, doing stuff that he needed to do. And then it just seems like his game's, yeah, really fallen off pretty dramatically over the last couple of weeks. I don't know, man. The Rangers, it's just like you keep waiting for them to pull out of this, you know, death spiral that they've been in for the last month or so, but it just doesn't really seem like it's happening. Just it's like one crisis after another, whether it's Trouba or whether it's Kakko now with other stuff mixed in between. Yeah, man, they're up against it. And I think, you know, when you talk about teams that are going through it, man, they still have to be at the top of the list, and they were at the top of the list a month ago too, right? So that's a bad sign.
Is it just too much noise? I mean, is it just, are we at the point where it's just that the volume around this team has sort of swamped their ability to get back on track, do you think?
I also don't know how good of a team that is. Mm. Like, if you don't have Mika Zibanejad playing like a, you know, maybe not a high-end 1C, but a 1C, and he hasn't for the duration of the season, if you don't have that, And if you're struggling with figuring out what to do with Keandre Miller and who plays on the first pair with Fox, I mean, there's major questions surrounding that team. And I think there's always been the potential for that stuff to pop up and turn into an issue. And it kind of seems like it all happened at once, right? So do I think that this team's like true talent level is where it's at right now or where it's been for the last, you know, month or 6 weeks at? No. But also, like, there have been problems that have been present and that have shown up in the playoffs over the last couple of years. And I think now what we're seeing is those kind of issues stretched out over the course of a full 82 game season. So do I think that they're as bad as they've been, like, you know, 10 times out of 10? No, but also, like, this isn't a legit top shelf, top to bottom contender, you know, from position one to position 25 on the roster either.
One of the other drama teams of the week in the NHL, also in the state of New York, the Buffalo Sabres, they've lost 10 in a row. And, you know, we heard the reports of the owner coming down to talk to the team and, I guess, voicing support, right? Saying, hey, the solutions are in this room. Don't expect a big trade, which I think had a lot of people scratching their heads. I do kind of understand where the Sabres are coming from, because they've given out so many of these long-term contracts. If you know, if you're trying to do a big shakeup trade, it almost inherently means you're probably trading somebody that you've invested in and you've, you know, really kind of wanted to be a big part of the future of your team. At the same time, it's clear nothing is working. It's if it's not already another lost season in Buffalo, it's headed that way in a hurry. Like, what path forward would you take? I mean, would you explore? Would there be untouchables for you on that roster? Would you be willing to kind of blow it up and do something wild? It just seems like they have to do something, but I also know how dangerous it can be to trade one of the really good young players they have on that team.
Yeah, I think that's the problem, right? Because you look up and down the list and you're like, what do they have on that roster that another team would want that could return something meaningful to Buffalo that isn't already locked up for years in term? Like, is it Bowen Byram? Like, is moving Bowen Byram enough to, like, if that's your big trade and that's your, you know, we need to shake things up and change the core and go in a different direction and blah, 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 all those platitudes you hear. Like, is that even enough? I tend to think not. But if it's not him, then you get into, like, is it Owen Power? Is it Dylan Cousins? Like, if you trade Dylan Cousins for 50 cents on the dollar, given the way he's played over the last little bit, like, I don't, is that something that's going to come back and bite you? I feel like he's kind of the variable here because he's still – He's a player who GMs tend to love too, right? Front offices look at Dylan Cousins and the way he played, you know, he's played in the not so distant past. And I think there's teams that would talk themselves into paying up for him. But then if you're Buffalo, is that a guy you necessarily want to move? Because he made all the sense in the world, you know, 18 months ago. So man, they're in a tough spot. It's just Buffalo's cursed. I think that's just where I've come to land on it. That's just like it's a cursed city. It's a cursed franchise. I think whatever they do, it's clear that it's going to be the wrong move. I think that's the one thing we've learned over the last little bit, that whatever decision they make is going to be the wrong one.
Congratulations to 2031 Conn Smythe winner for the Florida Panthers, Dylan Cousins.
Yeah. Does this mean Dylan Cousins is going to get traded somewhere and shoot 25% for two full seasons and, you know, get the bag and win a Stanley Cup,
and
maybe
be a Selke nominee?
That's what we're setting ourselves up for.
Yeah, I think so. Right, exactly. I think so. So congrats to Dylan Cousins. Just slog through it, buddy. Some Sun Belt team you're gonna make very happy. With what's going on in the East, Sean, the tragedy of the Buffalo Sabres and the Detroit Red Wings, arguably the New York Islanders, maybe the Pittsburgh Penguins in the closing sort of days of the Crosby era, is that it feels like the Bruins and the New York Rangers are very like 1915 Ottoman Empire vibes. Like, they are ripe for their empires to be punctured here. And it's just like, are any of these Eastern Conference upstart teams, the teams whose fans have been waiting for them to take a step forever, prepared to actually walk through that very open door?
I'll tell you, like, how many good teams are in the Eastern Conference? Just flat out.
Six.
Four?
Four? Four?
Over-under is 5.5.
Washington?
Teams there are
Washington? I'll ride for Washington. I'll ride for New Jersey. Yeah. I'll ride for Carolina. Yeah. I'll ride for Florida. I'll ride for Tampa Bay. Yeah.
So that's five?
Yeah.
That's five.
Yeah.
How do we feel about Toronto?
They're getting some really good goaltending.
Stolar's out 4 to 6 weeks.
He's out.
Stolar's a hurt. Like, look, man, we know that by the time the playoffs roll around, they're not going to have Stolar. they're not going to have a hole.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes. But yeah, I don't know, man. It's one of those things, like, you look at the conference standings, and there's just so much mediocrity. And I watch a lot of Metro Division games because I'm based in Pittsburgh. But man, you guys said it. Like, we just keep saying, like, one of the, like, Detroit, Ottawa, Buffalo, like, one of those teams has to grow up and look like a legit, not even like cup contender, just like you can lock it in as a playoff team. And they're obviously not even close. In one case, they're whatever. But Buffalo's hardest up out all three of them. But it's been the same story for 3 years. So, like, I mean, I'm at the point now where, like, I'll believe it when I see it on all those teams. Like, I'm assuming that those are all failed rebuilds or failed takeoffs until I have reason otherwise, because they've shown almost literally nothing outside of that run Detroit went on late last regular season to convince me otherwise. So, yeah, man, this is the chickens coming to roost for three teams that kind of engage in these super duper long-term rebuilds and kind of watch them fail, is that you're looking at an Eastern Conference where you're like, I'm not totally sure who the good teams are. And I think that's not going to change, you know, over the next couple months.
Power rankings of the, certainly the Atlantic Division Striver class, who would you be least surprised to see, whether they make the playoffs or not, get hot in the second half and go into the offseason with some reason for optimism? Rank them.
You have a lower bar?
Rank them, Ottawa. Wow. No, but they deserve it.
Who's going to have fake optimism going into the summer?
These teams deserve it. It's not a low bar for them. It's a low bar for everyone else.
Ottawa. We should qualify it even more.
Okay.
Like,
fake optimism rankings.
Kind of, sort of, my team could potentially do something if all the blah, 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 blah. Like, just keeping adding qualifiers onto it.
Okay, well, Ottawa's coming to town on Saturday, so I'm going to watch them on Saturday. Linus Ullmark's game looks like he's stabilized. They're actually in a playoff spot today by point percentage.
Yeah.
What's your mileage on the Ottawa Senators?
It's them for sure, because they have at least they have the most top-end talent, I think, out of that group. And Linus Ullmark, regardless of how bad he was, you know, maybe inconsistent he's been over the course of this season, I think he's a good goaltender. So I think the pieces in place for Ottawa to some degree, you know, whether it's Tkachuk or Stutzla or Batherson or Sanderson, like, they have players in place that you don't see necessarily certainly in Detroit. And then the Sabres are just, you know, they're the write-off. You're like, this is not going to work, because nothing ever works and nothing has worked there for 20 years, right? So I'm taking Ottawa, I'm taking Ottawa if you make me take one of the three, but I don't really want anything to do with any of them.
With the West, I've been starting to talk up Utah as just a team to watch, the one team that could sort of puncture the conversation we've been having in this market for a while, which is, you know, this feeling that the Western Conference playoff picture is more or less set, because Calgary falls out, Colorado replaces them. There we go. Nice and easy for everybody. No need to watch the rest of the regular season. I think Utah could spoil that party.
I thought so at the start of the season. I was kind of high on them coming into the start of the schedule. It was a slow start. I don't think I really liked those wingers. I liked that power play a lot. So I thought maybe they were going to score enough to make some early waves. It hasn't quite happened, but also they've been better of late.
Yep.
I think they're getting decent goaltending, with fairly reliable goaltending, whether it's from Vemelka or like Connor Ingram's kind of found his game over the last little bit too. So, that's another one, man. Like, it's a similar discussion to the one that we had about the Eastern Conference. There's just so many mediocre teams, but I think there's just more high-end teams in the West. The conversation around them slips to, like you guys said, who is eighth, who is ninth, who is tenth? And I think if you look at the teams that are out of the playoffs at the moment and you're trying to find someone who could conceivably make a run, I think it's Utah, because they do. They have some offensive game breakers potentially, you know, guys like Dylan Gunther, and then, you know, you got a half decent goaltending situation. So yeah, that if you're asking me to pick between the Calgarys and whoever's of the world, man, Utah's number one for me by a pretty solid margin.
Yeah, it's tough to see some of the other teams below that really jumping up and making a run at the playoffs, especially considering the field above them. You know, like, Colorado is in that second wild card spot right now, but I think everyone expects them to ultimately be there at the end of the season. And, you know, of course, one of the big disappointments this year in the West, in the NHL, the biggest, is the Nashville Predators, after all of the spending that they've done. I mean, they were 1-6-3 in their last 10, right? I think we can pretty safely say they're cooked at this point. I think the biggest question, though, is, how does Barry Trotz react to this? And could they be in a position to do something bold and or reckless, right? Take your pick coming up to the deadline. Like, I'm curious if this is going to be more than just a normal sell-off that a bad team does at the deadline, or if we could see something a little out of the ordinary from Barry Trotz and the Preds.
I look at the roster and I wonder who it would be, though, because like there's so many guys on that team that are in their 30s and make a bunch of money that, like, if you trade one of them, you kind of might as well trade all of them. You know what I mean? Like, if you're talking to people, whatever, like, just say someone calls about Philip Forsberg or whatever. Like, if you trade Philip Forsberg, he's your best offensive player. Mm-hmm. So then what are you doing? Like, are you starting an actual teardown? Like, can you knock down one domino and not have it turn into Forsberg goes? So then you start talking about Yossi. And then maybe if someone calls about Saros, who needs a goaltender and whatever. I think that's what makes the Preds situation so tough, is that, you know, they're a team that should be winning now, that isn't. And I think that makes the calculus pretty tough. I mean, we've seen it from Trotz already, though, man. He's not afraid to make tough decisions or bold decisions, whether that's last offseason when he's trading, you know, when he signs Marchessault and Stamkos, whether it's the one before that when he buys out Duchesne, kind of shockingly. So he's got that in his back. We know the GM version of Barry Trotz, like, isn't afraid. So it will be interesting, but man, I don't see how they knock down one domino without knocking down all the other ones. But whatever, I've been wrong before.
What do you make of the Canucks season? We haven't talked about them with you yet. The team is, you know, they're good. We know that they're mm-hmm. good, but we have sort of seen them vacillate between looking better than good, or, you know, potentially really good, and looking pretty messy on occasion as well. The lack of consistency has made it pretty hard for us in this market to get a sense of exactly what this team is. What's your sense from outside?
I feel like at some point in the last few weeks, and like, look, I think like Quinn Hughes, Hart Trophy candidate, I think he kind of has to be. So I'll preface everything with that. But like over the last few weeks, I think I went into like, all right, whatever. Let's see what happens whenever Demko's back and see what he has in the tank and see how they look with their dude in net, right? So I think that's kind of where I settled on them. This is just seems like it's an inconsistent team. Maybe he's the factor that, you know, the X factor that you know comes in and solidifies stuff and maybe helps him. You know, he's like the steady hand at the wheel. I don't know. I thought he looked fine last night, and we'll continue to watch, I guess. But yeah, I think that's kind of where I settled on them. Like, I didn't write them off, but I'm like, if something needs to change here, and maybe the goaltending is where it's going to be.
Hey, quickly, just before we let you go, Sean, the Penguins, I mean, early in the year, they looked like they might be in the competition for, you know, worst record in the league. They were absolutely dismal, especially defensively. Now, I haven't watched a lot of Penguins games except when they've played the Canucks recently. So, I was going to say, like, I don't know if it's actually better. The record is better, but is it still pretty grim for the Penguins in Pittsburgh?
It's been a pretty good 15-game stretch of hockey for them, let's say. Like, they're controlling play at 5-on-5. The penalty kill has been a lot better for them. That's an issue. The goaltending's, you know, still not very good, but nothing new there. They're playing well right now. And we've said it how many times over the course of the last 10 minutes, though, like, the Eastern Conference stinks. The teams at the bottom of it stink. They have stunk the least over the last few weeks. And I'm not willing to put too much stock until that until it lasts a little bit longer. So yeah, if you guys are, you know, still hoping Marcus Pettersson ends up in Vancouver or something over the course of the season, I wouldn't be all that dissuaded from that just yet.
The who stinks the least contest, also known as the Eastern Conference Wildcard Race, Sean.
We love it, baby.
That's NHL hockey right there. Who has, stinks the least?
Who has the fewest, like, cartoon lines indicating smelliness?
Yeah, it's otherwise known as the pig pen role. Yes, we're pulling back on Tina's characters for this one.
Thanks, Chantilly. Appreciate it, man.
All right, boys. Happy holidays.
That is happy Sean holidays, Gentile buddy. From The Athletic. Yeah, that was rude of me not to wish him happy holidays.
No kidding.
Thanks for pointing that out, Drance.
Well, he might have gotten mad at you for being woke, so who knows.
That sounds like Gentile.
That sounds like Dom.
Dom's not listening to the show. Don't worry.
Thank goodness.
It's all right. He's not paying attention. All right. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Yeah, the Eastern Conference, man, he's bang on. It is. It's not a pretty picture right now with the decline of the Bruins and the Rangers. And I kind of think the Leafs have been getting propped up in a pretty significant way.
They have,
by their
no
goaltending.
Question.
So, like, I don't know what that's going to look like. And even if it's like, well, Stolarz is out, it's like, I'm also not expecting him to be this guy for the remainder of the season. And
no,
the Stolarz
is awesome. He just has, like, the scariest injury history among any goaltender in the league, except for perhaps Joseph Woll. Like, it's like,
yeah,
their goaltending is really good. Both those guys are super talented, but let's just say it might be a little fragile, right? And then, I mean, I like Tampa.
I like Tampa, but not
I love Tampa.
As like an elite team
I
anymore.
Love Tampa.
You know what I mean?
They have a plus 30 goal differential, man.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
They're sick. They're absolutely sick. They're going to be a nightmare out in the playoffs. They need to add a right-handed forward. Like, when
I agree with you that they're going
when
to
they
be
add Palmieri,
a nightmare out in the playoffs. I agree with that.
When they add Palmieri, they are as likely as anybody except New Jersey and Carolina to make the Stanley Cup final, in my opinion, in the East.
More so than Florida.
I mean, I just, at some point, like, at some point, Florida's played too many games.
The Miles got to catch up, yeah.
I would say. Plus, I'm pretty concerned about the state of Florida's second pair. I think they're going to need to add a Montour replacement. You know, they've been able to do it without, and they don't need someone as good as Montour. They just need someone who can carry the puck and give them, like, an answer.
Yep.
On the second
someone
pair
who can fake
offensively.
It.
Well, just, I mean, their system makes defenders look really good, but they just need a little bit more mobility, a little bit more push in those minutes when Forsling's not on the ice. That's it.
All right, we'll take a break here. We got a couple open segments in the last hour of the show. By the way, this is going to be my last appearance on Canucks Talk until January. I'm on the morning show with Halford for Wednesday, Thursday, Friday this week.
That's a much nicer assignment than
it's
getting
Bruff. No, I like working with both of them, but the thing with Halford is he's the A chair.
You don't have to suck up to keep getting invited back. They like working
but,
with you.
But the thing with Halford is he's the A chair. So it is like, it's like I have so little to do. It's incredible.
Right.
Because with you, I'm the A chair. With Bruff, I'm the A chair. So it's right. Like I have to be a little bit organized and do all the reads and stuff, which is fine. That's my job. I'm not complaining. But with Halford, it's like, wow, I'm just sitting here. This is great.
Hey, being the B chair is hard. You got to get mad. You got to be grumpy.
That's true. You and Bruff have mastered the art of the grumpy B-chair.
You don't understand. Like, there's a, you know what? You should try it. You should go in.
I will try to be really grumpy.
Go in and tell Halford that we had this conversation and then do a whole show being like grumpy B-chair guy.
Well, I'm
as
filling,
a bit.
I'm filling in for Bruff, so.
Bring up Pettersson's contract.
I was going to say, I'm going to have to really, really go hard at Pettersson. I don't know what else Bruff is obsessed with. That's kind of the overarching one this year. But
I think Bruff's just grumpy. Like, I think it's fine.
Yeah. I'm having, like, major back pain today, which I feel like is a Jason Bruff thing. So I think I'm, like, already getting into character as Bruff. That'll help me be grumpy tomorrow.
And you can get one of those, like, you can go to, like, Relaxus or whatever and grab one of those things where you hang upside down to help your back pain. Sleep like a bat.
It's called an inversion table.
There you go. Of course you do.
My father is elderly. He uses it for his back.
Oh, nice. Okay. And because you're the Batman.
I'm Batman.
Anyway, I was going to say you could sleep like a bat like Bruff, but then I used the joke on Dom. So
yeah.
So it goes.
You'll never have to.
Anyways.
Okay, your Batman voice is not good enough.
That's fine.
Come on, man. You got to.
It's part of the gimmick. I thought it was a decent effort. I'm gonna be honest. I thought it was a decent effort from Dom.
I have no illusion.
It was on the spot.
It wasn't breathy enough. Has to be like, and you'll never have to. Like, it's like, honestly, the deepest possible version of the XX where you're like talking like you're about to asphyxiate.
Yes.
Nice goal.
I prefer the Bane voice.
Oh, yeah.
They expect one of us in the wreckage, brother. Okay, let's go to break.
All right. Anyways, what I was going to say is send your text in, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll get back into the game tomorrow. We'll answer your text next on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
It's Canucks Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, your destination for everything Canucks. Exclusive interviews, inside info, and even the postgame show. Listen 4 to 6 p.m. weekdays and on demand through your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and the and Canucks Talk is brought to you by the Hockey Shop in Langley. It's a great day for hockey. You can send your thoughts and questions in now to the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll see if we can get to them here during the course of the show. So somebody texted in. We were talking about Kiefer Sherwood's hat trick, the impact he's had on the team, gets his name chanted at Rogers Arena, the latest player to have that. The other guys are going to be feeling left out.
Well, the key,
it's the syllables.
Is the two syllables.
This is what I
name.
Said on Twitter last night. Like, you got this is the acquisition strategy. This is how you can sell guys with four syllables in their name. Come to Vancouver. If you have a good game, you will get your name chanted.
You know who I feel worst for in this, by the way?
Quinn Hughes?
No. Well, Quinn Hughes, that's... No. Dakota Joshua.
Yeah.
Because the name looks like, in terms of length,
it should be
perfect,
right?
But it's three syllables each.
Yeah, it's too much.
Yeah.
And it's tough because he's like the exact player that would be eligible for it.
You could do the last name, though.
How?
Joshua.
Yeah,
Joshua.
That's true. You could do a three-syllable last name.
Yeah.
Without the clapping in the middle.
Clapping in the middle.
Well, no, that's how the four-syllable one works, right? It's like Kiefer Sherwood.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what it is. I don't know if they actually clap, but it's implied.
Yeah. Also, I guess it works if it's one syllable and then three, because then you use
you could do the four syllable chant like Ray Ferraro, for example. Ray Ferraro. You could.
Sure.
A lot of Italians would fall into that category.
You got
the emphasis on the second syllable in the last name.
Anyway, Canucks fans love to chant. It's become a thing. We're the new Gregorians, Canucks fans.
Yeah, no, it is like a trademark now.
It is, 100%.
Somebody texted, they need to have a he's here, he's there, he's every freaking where, Quinn Hughes chant.
Ooh.
That might be the next stage of this, right?
Should happen.
Getting create. Okay, like, we need to figure out some way to honor Quinn Hughes, so we're going to have to go a little bit more creative. Well,
We also need songs. We need to go full European soccer fan, I'm pretty sure. I think it would be cool to have songs, full-on songs, sung during, like, when you're leading. I mean, that was the Canucks in the 80s, right? The hey, na-na-na-na-na, kiss them goodbye. Mm-hmm. Was like, Canucks fans sung off the opposition in the playoffs in 1982. It became, like, a big part of that run. So, it's in the tradition of this fan base, this hockey city, to have songs. I feel like we need a Canucks fans need a song to sing off opponents.
I like that. Or I think to celebrate individual players as well. I don't have an issue with that.
No, me neither. I'm not. I don't have an issue with any of this, to be honest with you.
Why are you so against Canucks fans supporting their team chants?
I'm not. But I will say there's something brainless about name chants.
Well, that's the thing. It's not a part of hockey culture, right? So I think it's like the entry level chant. Obviously, you wouldn't see this in soccer in Europe, right? Because they're in like graduate level chanting and songs and stuff, right?
Right.
We're just at entry level, so the Canucks fans need to work their way up to it. I think Jeffro texts in, "Come on, we can chant any name. What are we in preschool here? We're talking syllables here." I mean, you can try, but it's not going to sound good. The four syllables, the two-syllable first name, two-syllable last name, it just rolls off the tongue. It's very easy. It's easy for the crowd to grasp. It's easy for everyone to get on board. It comes across on the broadcast. It makes a lot of sense. Somebody else texts in, for Quinn Hughes, MVP. That's all. That's a good shout.
I have no problem with that.
That's a good shout. For Quinn Hughes, I like that one. Three-putt Shane says, Chant, nice entry, Petey. I always did think this when the Sedins were at the height of their powers, that when they really started ragging the puck on the boards and cycling in the offensive zone, that it would have been so great if the crowd started chanting cycle. Cycle, 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 as they're just exhausting a team with Alex Burrows on the board. I wanted that so bad. That would have been so great.
Yeah,
it would have been so funny.
It would have been fun to have something for those for withering.
Sedin. Yeah,
shifts.
Like a signature crowd reaction for those types of shifts from the Sedins. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line.
Can I stop you for a second? Would you like?
You just
to,
did.
Would you like to adapt a Zlatan Ibrahimovic chant to Kiefer Sherwood?
Well, it depends on what it is.
I'm gonna have to clean this up a little bit, okay. Obviously, because there is swearing, as you would imagine from an English chant. But you could do something like Kiefer Sherwood. He is a Canadian hero on free.
I'm out.
He's American. So
American. Sorry.
Okay.
I'm out,
yeah. On free from Nashville. He
nope.
Cost us effing zero. 6 foot hard as F. He gets the Canucks excited.
This is way too much. What
but
are we doing here?
You said graduate level chance,
but that's not even like a good or catchy one.
I will say I like the he costs us zero part.
Yeah.
That's fun. Like, that's a fun, you know. But maybe it's more like a Captain Planet, like Kiefer Sherwood, he's our hero. We got him for F and zero. That I'm here for.
See, we're workshopping.
That was a good one. That has potential to catch
See,
on.
I brought the stone and you cut it.
Yeah. Who doesn't love the Captain Planet song?
Well, no, honestly, Captain Planet, Kiefer Sherwood, actually, like, as a hook, works pretty good.
That's not bad. I like it. Okay, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And I think the reason I got into this, I was going to read this text. Could Sherwood influence Canucks management to move on from Brock Besser? The answer is no. Because, as you said, Kiefer Sherwood, excellent player, has been an incredible fit for the Canucks, but also you're not plugging him into the top of your lineup, right? So I don't think the two things are related at all. I think you are really, really happy that you're getting this sort of production at this price point for Kiefer Sherwood, but I don't think it changes how you look at the top of your lineup. And in fact, I mean, we were talking about it in the broadsheet today, right? Pierre LeBrun saying they're looking for a winger. They're not saying, oh, well, we have Kiefer Sherwood, so let's move him up. They're saying, that's great that Kiefer Sherwood is performing so well in a bottom six role. We also need more help on the wings. I do think, though, you know, to pivot to the Brock Besser discussion, I mean, the next time we do a show together, it'll be in January. And as you said on the show yesterday, right, January has tended to be a very, very busy month for this Canucks management group, whether it's starting to try to get key free agents signed, making big deals, whatever the case is. They've done let Bruce Boudreau go and hired Rick Tocchet in January. So they've done a lot of deals, a lot of business in January. And our attention is obviously going to turn to the trade market, especially if they don't do anything here before the roster freeze. But I think our attention in January should also turn to their key UFA situations. First on that list, of course, is Brock Besser. The money he's going to command, the role on the team, all of that. But I wouldn't sleep on Kevin Lankinen and Pew Suter as their other key UFA situations to monitor as well, right? And I don't know that there's going to be a deal to be made with Kevin Lankinen. It's because so much depends on what happens with Thatcher Demko for the rest of the season.
Well, I actually thought in Jim Rutherford's restrained availability the other day on, not availability, his interview
his
on
interview.
After Hours.
Yeah.
I thought the Lankinen commentary was perhaps the most actually substantive nugget that he dropped. And because it's a note about a backup goaltender, I don't know that it got, like, picked up
mm-hmm.
or discussed super widely. But I transcribed the quote at one point, but I don't know exactly where I've saved it. But the quote was effectively like, to paraphrase, something along the lines of, you know, is this situation different enough that we'd consider investing more in net than we might otherwise?
Yeah.
And it might be. Leaving the door open to, and the reason that it's so interesting is Rutherford's teams have been so scrupulous about cheaping out on backups, right? Like, sorry, cheaping out made it sound more negative than I intended. It's not criticism, right? Rutherford just views the backup.
It's a team building strategy. Like, we're not going to invest big in a backup. We're going to spend those dollars elsewhere.
Correct. And so, you know, we saw the moment that Matt Murray came off his ELC and the Penguins needed to pay both Matt Murray and Marc-Andre Fleury. Marc-Andre Fleury departed. We've never seen Jim Rutherford's Carolina Hurricanes employ two big money goaltenders. Like, that never happened. It's something that he's been scrupulous about, and it's something that he's brought to Vancouver. Vancouver went, you know, Spencer Martin. He inherited Yaroslav Halak, tried to move him before the bonuses kicked in. When they were unable to do it, it was too complicated. Fair enough. Not exactly their fault. And then we saw Spencer Martin and Colin Delia and Artur Shelov's, and then finally Lankinen. Like, they weren't even, you know, they played poker with Lankinen to get his number down. They were very, even this season, with everything that they were dealing with over the summer, and as a picture of increasing uncertainty emerged around Thatcher Demko's availability for the start of this season, turned out Demko wasn't ready until mid-December, the club was still, we're going to be pretty careful about committing money to a backup goaltender. And for the first time, you saw Rutherford kind of blink from that. Hey, do we have to consider something a little bit different here? I think that's a loaded piece of commentary, because while Besser is the more pressing situation, given that he's expiring, Demko becomes extension eligible after this season, right? The injury uncertainty that hangs around Demko, I think, is massive in terms of a high leverage inflection point for this club's decision making. And if you do decide to spend, now with Lankinen, we're sort of talking about that 1B type goalie contract, right?
Yep.
You're kind of talking, like, as a baseline, something like 2.5 times two in the old system. If the cap's 95 million, 96 million, does that become 3 million times two? You're committing $8 million to your goaltending. That's still less than 10%.
Yeah, like, that's still not wild or anything. You look around the league, that's less than a lot of teams.
It's not. So I'd be fascinated to see exactly how they navigate it. But, you know, Lankinen's probably not going to be that pricey, to be totally honest with you, in terms of you'd need a team to really view him as a starter. Otherwise,
yeah, to really want to come in and at least give him a long look as a starter.
Otherwise, that sort of Stuart Skinner range, which is like 2.7 times three, and, you know, Stuart Skinner plays 50 games a year, 60 games a year. I mean, you know, the backup goaltending jobs, that there's, and this is subject to inflation. Like, these guys used to all cost $1 million. Now you're seeing the Brossois of the world and on. Maybe they get to 2.5, 3. Maybe with some cap inflation, it's 3.5. But you're kind of looking at that pretty mid-range valuation. And, you know, I'd imagine a fair bit of it will be determined based on how much the club feels like they can rely on Demko from a durability standpoint over the course of this stretch run into this playoffs and then sort of into next year. And also exactly how they approach Demko this summer. You know, if Demko plays 45 games or, you know, between now, including the playoffs, 40 games, I think, of the remaining 50 would probably be a stretch. But if we're talking about a guy who's going to play 30 to 35 games in the regular season and then be their everyday guy in the playoffs, you get to 40, 42 games and he looks the way that he did last night. He looks like Demko.
Mm-hmm.
Does the club consider extending him proactively? If they do, does that also eliminate the need to go with a robust backup build, contrary to Rutherford's history and on? Anyway, I just thought it was interesting that Rutherford acknowledged the uniqueness of this goaltending situation in regards to Lankinen.
Well, in working with those numbers, right? So let's say it's 2 years at somewhere between 2.5 to 3 million. For Kevin Lankinen. That's a deal that could be on the table, you know, after the season, like during the season, that deal could potentially be on the table. no-brainer might be a little bit too strong, but I think it's getting pretty close because you play out every possible scenario with Thatcher Demko, and I don't know in what scenarios you would be frustrated that you had Kevin Lankinen signed to that deal. You know what I mean? If you can get him at 2 years, 2.75, what is going to happen with Thatcher Demko that you're like, oh, man, I wish we hadn't done that deal with Kevin Lankinen? Because even if Thatcher Demko starts a good chunk of the games remaining in this season, plays well in the playoffs, looks great, is healthy, you still have to think that the goal organizationally going into next year would be we want to limit his workload in the regular season and keep him as healthy and fresh as possible going into the playoffs. And Kevin Lankinen gives you a really, really good chance to do that. If there are further problems with Thatcher Demko's health between now and the start of next season, then again, I think you're going to be really happy that you have the insurance policy of Thatcher Demko. Even the more far out scenarios, like Thatcher Demko rebuilds his value and you decide to trade him in the offseason. Well, now you've got at least part of a goaltending tandem that you can feel pretty decent about in place with Kevin Lankinen. So given as what you said with the salary cap and the fact that even at the high end of that range, you'd still only be spending $8 million of your cap on goaltending going into next year, it's tough for me to see the downside of that type of deal. Now, I guess you could say, well, how much can you bet on Kevin Lankinen being this type of goalie for you going forward? I don't know. I mean, he's looked pretty good. You talked to Kevin Woodley. There was a lot of reason to be positive about him even before he came to Vancouver. He's worked with the goalie coach a lot in the past in Finland, so there's a level of comfort there. But I just think, given Demko's health and how much a priority keeping him fresh and reducing his workload should be, if you've got an option that you know works with your goalie coach, the coach trusts him, he likes being here, he's performing well here, and you don't have to break the bank, you don't have to get too uncomfortable to do it, again, that's pretty close to a no-brainer for me on Lankinen.
I think the other part of this that we have to factor in, right, to our overall analysis of what the Canucks can, should, might do with their unrestricted free agents. You know, the way that I sort of calculated it, you can go read my latest at The Athletic from Monday for sort of more of this, but you've got about $75.67 million committed. That's $5.47 in dead space plus, you know, 15 players, right? Demko, Desharnais, Soucy, Myers, Hronek, Hughes on defense, Patterson, Miller, DeBrusk, Garland, Joshua, Heinen, Bluger, Sherwood, Hoglander. At the very least, we're expecting a 5% increase to $92.4 million in terms of the upper limit. But as Elliot Friedman has reported at length, there's an expectation that the PA would be open to a negotiation that would bring the upper limit of the salary cap even higher.
I would bet they would be open to that, the PA.
Generally, yes.
Yeah, they're going to be open to that.
Now, you know my qualifiers.
Uh-huh.
Who knows what impact a trade war, for example, between like something as wild and out of left field that no one could see coming as like perhaps a trade war between United States and Canada could fundamentally alter, for example, the value of Canadian currency and thus NHL revenues really significantly between now and when the league and the PA sort of are in negotiations in May and June. So don't take it to the bank necessarily, but mid-90s million, you're talking about 20-ish million in space. So the way to think about it, I think, is you've got Miller, Pettersson, Bluger, Dunn at center. Okay, so that's you're not hard-pressed.
No, it's not like a desperation situation at center, for sure.
You've got DeBrusk, Garland, Joshua, Heinen, Sherwood, Hoglander on the wings. That's three lines worth of wings that you're not upset about playing in your top nine, but you're probably going to need to add one or two. You've got Hughes, Hronek, Soucy, Myers, Desharnais on defense. You probably need a number 2-3 defenseman, right?
Yep.
And you need a backup goaltender. So we're at a couple of wingers, ideally a center.
2-3 defenseman.
A 2-3 defenseman and depth, whatever, and a backup goaltender. With $20 million to play with?
Yep.
Like, when you really sort of break it down, I do think this Alvin Rutherford group deserve a lot of credit. As much as, you know, hey, maybe they made too many changes this offseason, and as a result, this team's been shaky. You know, I don't buy it.
I was going to say, like, I do not care for that talking point whatsoever.
Well, especially because...
Especially on the blue line. It's been Hughes, Hronek, Juleson, Susie Myers. They were all here last year. Like, what are we talking about?
Okay, whether you're buying it or not, the fact is that by approaching it the way that they have, they've done a pretty incredible job untangling what was one of the messiest cap situations in the league when they took over. And the main way that they've done it is by managing the term of these deals, by having, you know, you haven't seen them commit to, other than Mikheyev, you know, the like long depth contract.
Yeah.
And when they have done it, they've quickly realized their mistake and found a way to schlep it off on Chicago. So you sort of look at where this team is. They're pretty well positioned. Like, I think you could retain Besser and Suter and still have money for a big swing.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
I think you could retain Besser and Suter and Lankinen, and you'd still have the ability to add, right? Like, if we assume 4.5 for Suter, 2.5 for Lankinen, 9 for Besser, you can still have like $6 million to upgrade your defense core. You probably don't have enough for a big swing, but you have enough to find maybe not a 2-3, but probably a 3-4.
Yep.
Right? So, like, this team's going to have some options, some decent ones, which I think needs to factor in. Like, these are not the gut-wrenching decisions that this organization has faced most of the last 5 summers, where it was like, oh, they're entering the offseason over the cap.
Yeah.
Or they can maybe,
or by the time they sign their RFAs, they'll have like $3 million left or something.
Or,
yeah.
or before yeah. they can go shopping, they're going to need to figure out how to shed Eriksson, Roussel, and Beagle's contracts, right? I mean, like, really, this team has found itself back to the wall so often over the last 5-6 years, and this is different. There's meaningful flexibility to make reasonable bets on your own guys, but also trust that you're going to be able to actually be able to trust you're going to be able to go to market and actually have the space to improve without harming sort of the depth of the club. I think it's an interesting sort of way to underline this, because there's no, you don't need to walk away from Pugh Suter. You don't need to walk away from Lankinen. You don't need to walk away from Besser. And in fact, you can sign all 3 of them and still have the
still
space.
Have some money to play with.
Still have some meaningful wiggle and potentially more if you were able to reallocate, you know, for example, Hoglander and Desharnais.
Yeah. All right. We'll take a break. Final segment coming up. Keep your texts coming in to 650-650, the Dunbar Lumber text line. It is Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.
This is awful.
This is terrible. I think,
isn't it bad?
Dom has been,
hey, like the 12 days of Christmas itself, it's foul.
I like the 12 days of Christmas as a song.
I saw a good tweet.
Especially the Canadian version.
Yeah.
Bob and Doug.
I saw a good tweet the other day that was like, the 12 Days of Christmas is the most unrealistic song ever. There's no chance that you're accepting gifts from this person on the 5th day after 4 days of birds. I thought that was dead on.
I was listening to that with my family a couple weeks ago. My youngest daughter goes, that guy knows all his numbers. It's like, you're right. He has a real command of the numbers. It's very impressive.
Kids say that.
He really knows
thing.
All his numbers. Yeah, it's a weird song in general.
Yeah, I mean, he's like buying people.
But even like the structure of the song, like I can't think of any other songs or structure
people?
Of that.
Was,
yeah, what's, the Lord's a leaping.
And the
drummer's
maids,
drumming.
And the maid's a milking.
Yeah.
I think it's a metaphor.
No.
What are drummers drumming a metaphor for?
For society?
I don't think
our addiction to technology?
I think it's one of the least metaphorical songs ever written.
Also, what about that song tells you about technology? It's like an agrarian lord who's like buying serfs.
I was quoting, forgetting
for his lady.
Sarah Marshall.
Ah. Okay.
I was going to say, I think Dom has been frustrated with how long I've been letting the intro music run, coming back into segments.
Well, sometimes it's just ridiculous.
So you chose like the most annoying song you could find. You're like, this will get him to start speaking. And it worked. Congratulations to you. I was like, oh, I got to get on here.
Sometimes you just
I got to cut this off.
With the headphones off, you're just like twiddling your thumbs. And I'm looking at you like, hello, we're back.
It's called letting the moment breathe, Dom.
When I was growing up, we used to have placards displaying, you know, all the various waterfowl and other things bought over the 12 days of Christmas. And at Christmas parties, someone would play the piano.
What do you mean placards?
Placards.
Waterfowl.
You had 12 days of Christmas placards?
Correct. We had little cards, and whoever was assigned the number would hold the placard, and then you wait. Everyone sings together on the first day of Christmas.
Yeah.
And then when it's your number, you hold up the placard and sing it, and then the round continues.
And if you forget, do you drink?
No, we just, you don't forget because you're part of the community of placard
holding
singers.
It's pretty easy to know when to do it. Like, I'm number three. I'm going to hold it up after two.
And if you, exactly. And if you forget, the person beside you hits you in the leg or something.
I'm not going to lie. This sounds like a drinking game.
I mean, it's usually done somewhat inebriated because it happens at Christmas.
By the way, eggnog with rum in it. Yay or nay?
Yay. Big yay.
Not a big eggnog guy.
Wow.
But if I were to drink it, I would probably put some rum in it.
I mean, yeah. And I'm a rum, not a whiskey or rye in eggnog guy. I like the rum. I like the rum and drinkable custard combo.
Somebody just texted in, hey, guys, great segment. I was like, that's a lie. That's a lie. All right. Reg texted in.
Well, what's your favorite Christmas carol?
My favorite Christmas carol, probably Silent Night.
No.
What do you mean?
So vanilla.
It's a classic for a reason.
Jamie
Dodd,
your favorite?
Vanilla.
It's only a classic in the original German.
Okay.
If you'd said Stella Knocked, I'd say fine.
What's your favorite?
Jamie and his family.
Now, do you mean
there?
Christmas carol or Christmas song?
Christmas carol.
Okay. Then Silent Night. What's yours? Actually, you know what? I'm going to change to Three Kings. We Three Kings.
We Three Kings.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the one problem that I had with Three Kings, though, is I always thought they were coming from a place called Orientar.
Yeah, I was the one who told you about this
right.
On air last year.
And it blew my mind. To this day, I kind of still don't believe you.
Miss any part of Halford and Bruff in the morning?
Yeah, just kick us off the air. That's fine.
Promo Halford and Bruff here. All right. What's your favorite?
Good King Wenceslas.
Yeah, that's a good one, to be honest.
Everyone loves Good King Wenceslas.
Yeah. Did somebody ask for Stille Nacht?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah, no, we all know the song.
But it's a banger.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Doesn't it feel like Christmas now?
All is schlaf.
Oh, you know it.
Ein Sam Wacht.
Keep going.
No one wants to hear me butcher the German.
Oh, boy. All right. Back into it.
Should we just play various Christmas carols in other languages?
Probably not. I feel like Canberra would have something to say about that. That use of company time for the final 20 minutes of the show.
Let's circle back in January.
We'll see. All right, Reg texted in. You guys have been making me think ever since you mentioned Taylor Hall's name earlier. Is he a guy that we could fit under the cap, get him cheap asset-wise? I don't think he's washed yet. Do you? The interesting thing there is, we talked about the Capo Caco storyline out of New York today, right? But Taylor Hall, who was a healthy scratch under their previous coach, Luke Richardson, earlier in the year, missed game day skate today for the Blackhawks. And when asked about it, their new coach, Sorensen, was pretty cryptic and kind of said, well, he took the day off. He took the morning off. We'll see. Game time decision on Taylor Hall. So it hasn't been a clean fit, obviously, in Chicago with Taylor Hall, even this year when he's been healthy, you know, out of the lineup. It just doesn't seem like it's working, right? So I think the asset cost for Taylor Hall probably would be pretty reasonable. He's at $6 million. You're looking at retention in all likelihood, unless they move other money out and toll a whole bunch before the trade deadline to make that work. It's the kind of thing, I mean, you said earlier, right? You'd like to see them swing big. I would have time for the idea of adding Taylor Hall a guy who, you know, can still move pretty well, obviously has the pedigree, the scoring ability from earlier in his career, you know, not that far removed from a 60-point season with the Boston Bruins.
His durability has been an issue.
Yeah.
And he hasn't hit over 40 points since 2021, 2022. But over his last 101 healthy games, he's on like a 40-point pace.
Yeah.
It's not terrible.
It's not great.
No, but it's not.
It feels like we had the conversation earlier. Who are the big names out there? Well, something will probably materialize. And I agree with that. Usually it does, right? There will be a big name that moves. But Taylor Hall feels more like the, okay, either A, that didn't happen, or we missed out on him, so let's double back and look at Taylor Hall, right?
Someone texts, is this a sports talk show? No, it's a German Carol talk show.
Yeah.
We talk.
It's a hybrid sports talk show interspersed with performances of German Christmas carols.
Talk about the Canucks power play in German. Go.
Are you a O Tannenbaum guy or a Stilenoch guy?
They're both great.
How about Kling Glockchen?
What is that one?
Ring little bell.
I don't even know that one in English.
Me neither.
Yeah. You just search German Christmas carols.
100%.
Yeah.
I cheated.
Anyway, if you want to talk me into, you know, Taylor Hall next to JT Miller and Brock Besser, and hey, put him in that situation, veteran, all that, I'm not writing it off out of hand, but it's got to be fairly far down the priority list, I would think, for the Canucks at this point, right? Like, you'd have to be talking really reasonable acquisition cost, and probably you're striking out on some other options, I think, before you start really thinking about Taylor Hall and adding him to the team.
Yeah, you know, he's not the difference-making guy, but I just like the upside there a fair bit at a lower cost. You know what I mean? Like, Brock Nelson's going to cost you firsts plus.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. I mean, you're talking about a pretty unique profile, 6'4", 210 pounds, by all accounts, you know, lovely person. He's been to the conference final multiple times. Big game experience, on and on. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big piece. That's a big piece with a big acquisition cost. You know, I don't know. He's just one of those guys where it's like, I like the player a lot, but is the juice worth the squeeze on a rental?
Mm-hmm.
Who's you know, a really good non-star performer.
Yeah.
Like Taylor Hall, I think if you're betting on Taylor Hall, you're betting on if he can stay healthy and if Chicago is just making all sorts of really good players look a lot worse than they are because the situation's so toxic, which I like both those bets. I think you could get like a really standout third line type guy, like the sort of third line, like you're talking about attacking teams with something like Pugh Suter, Taylor Hall, and Kiefer Sherwood, just like skating at warp speed. Mm-hmm. That interests me.
Yeah, that's an interesting point too. Although, again, I think you're looking for that top six piece if it's out there.
Right.
That has to be first priority. I like the idea of, okay, can we lean into the depth advantage that I think we've seen play in both of the Florida wins and the Colorado wins, right? I mean, it was the depth guys leading the charge. It was the depth advantage that helped them in those games. I don't mind the idea of leaning into that and can we find an even better piece for our third line and make that really a strength that gives the other team fits and causes matchup problems. But you also need that top of the lineup piece, right? Like, and I think that has to be the priority, and it might be a little difficult to do both. But again, if you're out there, you know, a couple of weeks before the deadline, you haven't been able to get anything else done, sure, why not? Then start looking at things like that.
It's real hard to find. Like, it's such an odd marketplace. We got a text in suggesting Bjorkstrand.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that fit. Because that's a guy who absolutely can play at the top of your lineup. Defensively reliable. Tockett would like him. One-shot scorer. Super skilled. You know, that's one that would appeal to me.
I like that. How is he a UFA?
2 years left.
2 years left?
So, it would be expensive, but I mean, he's sick, right-handed shot.
Yep.
Play on the power play. Pretty consistent 45, 50-point guy.
Yep. Really nice fit next to Pettersson and DeBrusque on the right wing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right shot scorer, too.
Yep. Yeah, so, that's an interesting one.
So if the Kraken decide to do some stuff, I mean, Bjorkstrand would be, that was a suggestion from the inbox, and it's one that I endorse fully. That's a really good player.
Do the Will Borgen, Oliver Bjorkstrand combo trade.
Oh, please. That's all 12 days of Christmas rolled in one.
Throw in some waterfowl? You're talking.
And a Bjorkstrand in a pear tree? Oh, boy. Let's go.
I was thinking last night about, you know, the Canucks chant-centric acquisition strategy, and I think it was like with Borgen, I think they'd have to get him to switch to Willie so then the fans could chant. They go, Willie, do the Willie Borgen chant. I don't know how he would feel about that, but that might be part and parcel of the deal if they do it. A lot of people texting about Alex Tuch out of Buffalo. I forget exactly who had the report, but somebody said earlier this week with all of the Buffalo and Canucks talk that the Canucks had maybe inquired about Alex Tuch, but were told, no, we're not moving him. I understand why. He's a really, really good player. That'd be a great fit.
From Syracuse, New York. Like, that's, you know, Alex Tuck's pretty important to what they're trying to build, I think. But, yeah, I mean, the Vroom man himself, bring him in. Alex Tuck's one of my favorite players to watch, period. Like, I just love 6'4" guys that can skate like the wind and score off the rush. That's pretty much the best part about hockey, watching really big, skilled people do incredible stuff.
And I mean, just who knows about, like, and he has a 5-team no trade list, right? As you said, local. So that could pose a problem, even if they were willing to explore dealing him, which it doesn't sound like they are. Who knows what Buffalo is going to do, basically, beyond individual players?
I still think the Rangers, though, like, if you're,
is that the team?
Well, I mean,
was just gonna ask, like, what, like, from a team level perspective, who are you, you know, we mentioned earlier,
Rangers,
I mentioned with Gentile,
the ultimate X factor.
I would think so.
You know what I mean? In terms of just, like, I mean, we've already had a Trouba trade, but Kreider's name was in that report, too. That's more than interesting.
Yep. Kako. Right? Keandre Miller, who is an RFA.
Riley Smith's expiring.
Yeah. Yeah.
Riley Smith is awesome.
Sure, but again, a complimentary piece, right? If you're looking for the big swing.
Yeah, Riley Smith is awesome. Really good, like, connective player. I don't know. He's just not right-handed. That's the issue.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, so I feel like the Rangers are the ultimate. The Rangers, doesn't Chris Kreider feel to you like a Vegas Golden Knight?
A little bit, yeah. I could see
that. Terrifying prospect, but.
What about for the Canucks?
Sure. I mean, Chris Kreider's in that mold of giant human being that does really cool stuff. Like, I love that. Sounds great.
Your new criteria for trade targets. A giant human being? It was Nikita Zadorov.
That's what teams, that, I mean, there's a reason that this player, the problem is you do have to be at such a high level. Like, there was someone in, I was having a conversation with someone about, they were sort of suggesting that Pettersson can't get it done in the playoffs or whatever. And then they were like, you know, he's not a proven playoff winner like Matthew Tkachuk. And I chimed in and said, like, that's funny, given what the narrative was around Matthew Tkachuk as a playoff performer before he went to Florida. And, you know, they said, well, everyone knows power forwards take longer to develop. And I'm like, do they? Or is that something teams tell themselves while giving an absurd amount of opportunities to guys that are never going to hit? You know, I'm all for, like, I think you have to be careful. You have to be careful when you're evaluating players that you're not just being like, hey, this guy, we prefer this guy, even though the smaller player is Connor Garland. And it's like Connor Garland's just better than almost any 6'4" guy other than, like, star-level performers that you could put on an ice sheet. And I think the temptation is to be like, well, we'll bet on that. But you can't divorce it from hockey talent. But when you get the guys who are able to do incredible stuff and are 6'4", I mean, that's an awful lot of fun.
Yes, that's pretty great.
Yeah,
that's nice.
It rules. That's it.
650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and you can continue to send your trade questions in, trade target questions. Just doubling back a little bit to the game from last night, and, you know, we talked a lot about, Kiefer Sherwood, who of course picks up the hat trick. Thatcher Demko looking really good, getting his first win in a long time in that one against the Colorado Avalanche. You know, I wanted to highlight as well, I thought the JT Miller line did a really good job against the Nathan MacKinnon line. That's one of the toughest matchups in hockey, and it was head-to-head a lot. And I think the shot count was pretty in favor of Nathan MacKinnon. But if you looked at like the scoring chances and what they're actually generating, they did a really good job limiting them in that matchup, which that's a huge deal. I think early in the season, before Miller had taken his personal leave of absence, you know, he was scoring and he was producing, but I don't know if we were seeing kind of the same level of two-way play from JT Miller that we were last season. That's still a huge part of how this team is going to be successful, right? That 1-2 punch down the middle that Rick Tocchet has talked about with JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. And, you know, so often last year it was JT Miller's line along with Brock Besser getting that really tough assignment, being paired with Quinn Hughes and finding a way to either win or at least draw even in it. And that kind of being a foundation of how they wanted to play, that's a big deal. For if they can get that version of JT Miller consistently for the rest of the season, yes, the other, you know, the depth still has to keep scoring and Elias Pettersson needs to have the jump that I thought he had last night more consistently. But I thought a really, you know, one of the other things that stood out to me was the Miller line doing a pretty good job, I thought, against Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen.
Yeah, for sure. They especially again in that third period, you could tell like the Canucks were still throwing hits and it felt like the Avs weren't going to pay the price required to win sufficient battles to generate against the Canucks. And that's, you love to see that from a team trying to shut it down. I think it's a big major reason why the Avalanche didn't generate very much until really the last 7-8 minutes of the period. The Canucks outworked them, which again is where the defensive gaps in the games against Boston and St. Louis become mildly aggravating.
Not mildly. Because, like, what's in your control? How hard you're working.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, so it's different than, oh, man. Like, we all know there's problems on the blue line with moving the puck. But if it was just that, I think it would be less frustrating. But when you see the team capable of having these really high effort, high work rate performances against really good teams, and you know, it's like, well, that's purely in their control. It's not as if the defensive personnel changed. They didn't all of a sudden get way better at moving the puck, and that's what changed. It's just that they were working hard, that they were engaged, that there weren't passengers, right? As Rick Tocchet talked about. Well, that makes it frustrating because it should theoretically be in their control.
Well, and this is where, so the Canucks, this is before the Bruins game. So not counting the last two games, which we'll call a wash because one of them was the worst defensive effort of the season and one of them was the best, right?
Yeah.
The Canucks sort of went into the game against the Bruins ranked 21st in the league by expected goal differential according to like the privately tracked SportLogic data. 21st. Okay. Now, we know that they're not pop gun offensively, but focused more on offensive zone time and are willing to play it conservatively unless they get high quality chances. And that bears out in the data, right? Seventh among all teams in terms of actual raw offensive zone possession, but average or below basically everywhere else, 13th in terms of their expected goals produced offensively. And it's the defense that is sort of odd when you look at Vancouver. Like Vancouver, in terms of expected goals, 23rd. 23rd, that's below average.
Yeah.
That's below average and such a massive departure.
Bottom third of the league.
Yeah, it's massive departure from what this team became down the stretch last season, according to the same data set, which was, you know, partly what I was looking at when I was talking about the Canucks' emergence as an elite defensive team. And we all saw it. It wasn't groundbreaking analysis down the stretch last season. And when you think about, like, the specific areas that have caused them to sort of get to this point, 11th. In terms of the rate at which teams are generating shot attempts, 16th in shots, 13th in slot shots, 12th in inner slot shots. I mean, it's impossible for me to look at the personnel that this team has. And yeah, you're down Zadorov and Cole. But fundamentally, this team's defensive personnel, like Juleson played 50 games for them. Myers, Soucie.
Hughes. Hronek for most of the season.
I mean, there's not a huge departure there, and yet this team's defensive form has been like closer to average or above average, if you're being generous, than it has been to being really, really good lockdown defense. We know that they have this defensive fastball in them, but they're not sustaining the work rate required to be a robust defensive team. And I think when we're talking about this team's inconsistency, that's what we're talking about. It's that the defensive game has their defensive work rate in particular has vacillated. And when it's been low, first of all, you can tell right at the outset of the game, and they start to be permissive and allow too many shots against. Mm-hmm. And so you're getting fewer of those, hey, they weren't sharp tonight, but there was a predictable standard that they hit. I think that's why the floor has fallen out on this team. They're still capable of games like we saw last night against the Avs or against Florida last week, but they're still searching for like a golden mean. And they're vacillating wildly
absolutely.
In terms of their form game to game, which is partly why it's so hard to put our finger on exactly what this team is.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, that does it for us today. As I mentioned earlier, it was my last Canucks talk of the year. I'm on with Halford on the morning show for the rest of the week, taking some time off. I'll be back on Canucks Talk in January. So to all our listeners, thanks for listening all year. We really appreciate it. Have a safe, happy holidays, Merry Christmas and all that. And I will talk to you in the new year. That is if you're not a Halford and Brough listener as well. Just before we sign off, I want to mention the Canucks play Utah tomorrow. Their general manager, Bill Armstrong, he'll be on Canucks Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah today at 4:30. So make sure to tune into that and keep it right here on Sportsnet 650.